This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 33. Hello everyone, this is Gilbert, your host. Welcome to the show. Today we have a special guest by the name of Christopher Chu. Christopher started his career on Wall Street and later decided that that was not the life that he wanted to live. So he sold all his possessions and moved halfway across the world to Chiang Mai, Thailand, where he began anew and now works leading men's only retreats in Peru every year for ayahuasca and other healing practices. Join me in learning how he was able to step away from a well-paying job with a career ahead of him and decide to make the shift that he made and what we can all learn from him. Join me in welcoming Christopher Chu. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today we have Christopher Chu with us today. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, what's up, Gilbert? Thanks a lot for having me, brother. Appreciate the opportunity.
Great to have you as a guest today. Today we'll be talking about Chris's journey from Wall Street to living and working between Bali and Chiang Mai, and what inspired his change, what we can learn from it, and some other ideas or practices that are less talked about in the day-to-day life and that we can all apply into our lives. So starting off, just jumping right in, Chris, tell us about your story. What's your backstory? How did you get here to where you are today?
A backstory. So we are very similar. I come from New York. I grew up in New York. I come from immigrant Chinese parents. My dad's from Hong Kong. My mom's side's from mainland China. So yeah, I grew up firstborn, two other brothers as well. I'm the oldest. And so yeah, it was a very traditional upbringing in upstate New York where education was very focused. And so yeah, I went to SUNY Binghamton, graduated. And then after college, I then made the transition down to New York City. And that's where I got my second corporate job, but that job was for Morgan Stanley. So that's kind of what started that period of that chapter of my mid-20s. And so I basically moved from upstate New York down to Hoboken, New Jersey. And I was working at the Midtown office of Morgan Stanley right at Times Square. So I'm at around age 26 when this happened. And for me, it was probably one of the best things, you know, being a young adult at that time, you know, come from a small town, that was a dream to come work for a big firm and live the fast-paced city life. So I came down and yeah, I loved it at first. You know, it was flashy, it was fast-paced. I got to hang out with my friends from college. I got to party a lot, and the social nightlife scene was very fun. So yeah, I started that. That was a journey. And I was at Morgan Stanley, then I transitioned to a Fox Pinkel in a small equity research firm. Afterwards, I then transitioned to a small equity research firm, Fox Pinkel, and that was in New York City as well. So this is around 28, around that time. And so about halfway through, so total time I worked 8 years on Wall Street. This is about 4 years into it. That's kind of when signs that this lifestyle is not healthy for me. I was not into meditation at this time. And the only thing healthy I did for myself was go to the gym. That's pretty much it. I was a gym bro. My weekends was pretty much partying and working, you know, the work hard, play hard, fast paced lifestyle. So one day I wake up at my girlfriend's house, listen, like something feels off, but I had to go to the city because I was taking my MBA entrance exam. So I go to the city, I take the 4-hour exam, and I'm still not feeling good. So I go back to Hoboken and I go to the hospital and I get checked out because I'm like, you know, this doesn't feel normal. Something definitely feels off. So the doctor looks at me and we go through the basic checkups. You know, he's like, you look healthy. You're a fit guy. You're muscular. And we can't find anything. And I'm like, okay. He's like, but let's just go get an x-ray done on your chest just to see if there's anything we can find. So he comes back with the x-ray and he puts it up on the chart. And we have two lungs, our left and our right. So my left lung, it's nice and elongated, it's inflated, it's healthy looking. And then he points to the right lung on this side, and what should be an elongated lung is the size of a golf ball. And he says, your lung has collapsed because that's why you can't breathe. And so that was the one of the incidents that kind of woke me up. So what they had to do is they had to rush me to the emergency room. They had to put me in surgery, and they basically had to stick a chest tube inside my chest to reinflate the lung. And I was, you know, my parents then came from upstate. They came to check on me and stay with me at the hospital. So I was in the hospital for about a week, and it was painful. And then I got released and I went back home. But the doctor's orders was, listen, no going back to work. So I was out of work for a month, and I was on painkillers and just bedridden. And I couldn't do much else. I couldn't work out, and I lost about 20 pounds of weight. So that was about 2029. I didn't change anything with my lifestyle. You know, like I said, I was also into cocaine at the time as well as a way of releasing stress. So I went back to going back to work, working 46 hours a week. Plus I was going for my MBA now at the time at Baruch. So on top of all the stress, I'm also adding educational stress. And yeah, I just went back to how I was. And 9 months later, from the first time it happened, I ended up in the hospital again because the second time my lung collapsed. So this time I knew right away because of the pain I had. So I went straight to the hospital. And this time they're like, listen, we really need to do a heavy duty surgery on you. One that we do airline pilots and divers, because they're in pressurized environments, they are more susceptible to having a collapsed lung. So we need to get that same operation to you. So they prep me, and this time it's like a 4 to 6 hour surgery. And of course my parents come down and they're definitely worried. So that was a wake up call. I'm in the hospital again for a week, and this time I go back home. But this time, instead of a month being out of work, I was out of work for 2 months. So that finally caught my attention. That's when I'm like, all right, what the hell am I doing with my life? Am I just meant here to chase money and party? And you know, I'm 29. So everything's just, my world is just chaotic. You know, this is also during the time of the financial crisis of 2008, 2009. So work is super stressful. I'm always worried about losing my job. And then the reason why I should also add is the reason why I'm kind of here is my parents also, you know, coming from Asian parents, they want you to have a good life. So they really stress education. So that's a big reason why I went to my MBA. And it's also why I kind of stayed in that job on Wall Street. I wasn't happy, but it was paying a lot of money. This incident really forced me to reevaluate and question what my values are. What am I really here to do? And I read this book called Career Renegade by Jonathan Fields. And I know who he was at the time, but he's a pretty well-known author, speaker, and coach. But I read this book, and this book, he had a similar journey. He was working as a job in a high-paced, high-stress corporate lawyer job, and he had a heart attack. And he then transitioned out into creating, you know, yoga products, a yoga DVD system, and then a yoga school. And I read that book and I was like, wow, here's someone who transitioned from, you know, a successful corporate career to something more fulfilling. And that kind of planted the seed in my head to start at least thinking about it. I still didn't know what I wanted to do, but it at least kind of like the light bulb went off, like, wow, there's something else I can do. So yeah, so the transition out of that was, at the end of it, I had also I had also hired an Asian dating coach to get my life in order with women.
An Asian dating coach.
Yeah, it was a dating coach who specialized in helping Asian men because of all the negative conditioning and the stereotypes that we've had to deal with. Plus,
was that Johnny?
Yeah, it was JT Tran, ABC's Attraction. So yeah, it was Johnny's company. So I took a boot camp with JT, you know, around the same time. So that was also like another big moment for me, because that's kind of what put me onto personal development. And I realized, you know, I wasn't so much into like the pickup, like one cheesy one-liners. I was more into like the holistic approach of, listen, like I really need to get my life in order to date. So I end up finding out who Johnny is. And Johnny, you know, at the time he was pretty much like the first digital nomad. And he was talking about training Muay Thai in Thailand and working online. And so because of one of his videos I seen on YouTube, I was like, you know what? I need to try something new. Let me just try Muay Thai. So for New Year's resolution, I was like, let me look up a Muay Thai gym and check it out. So 2012, I went to Evolution Muay Thai in New York City, and I tried one of the free Muay Thai classes. And instantly, I got hooked. I was like, wow, this is so much better. Because before that, I just only done weightlifting. And I was a pretty jacked guy, but it was boring. It wasn't engaging. It wasn't mentally stimulating. So I tried Muay Thai, and I just instantly fell in love with it. So this is at the same time I finished my MBA. I was starting to look up places in Thailand because, you know, I was reading about people who do extended Muay Thai vacations in Thailand, who travel. And I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to follow my passion. So I told my boss, I'm like, hey, listen, I have about 6 weeks of vacation time saved up. Can I finally use it? Because I've been working for the last 8 years and not taking any vacations. I was like, listen, I want to go to Thailand and train for 6 weeks at different Muay Thai camps. And he was actually cool with it. He was like, yeah, sure, go for it. And I was like, really? I can do that and still have my job? And he was like, yeah. So May 2012, I flew to Thailand by myself. That was the first time coming to Asia. And I went to Phuket for 3 weeks. And I got to chill by the beaches, train Muay Thai in the morning, train at night. And it was a dream come true for me. It was the first time I felt like a sense of freedom coming to Thailand. All this stress, I just felt like it was lifted off my weight. I just felt like I belonged there. You know, I think I always felt like an outcast in the US because of my background. And so, yeah, it was the first time I felt comfortable being around other Asian people where people looked like me. And so, yeah, I met other travelers also who were either traveling long-term or expats. And so it was just a magical experience. At that time also, I then met my meditation teacher and I tried meditation for the first time. And that had a big impact on me as well. I remember going to the class and the teacher told me he was walking us through a guided meditation. It was just like a simple breathing and sitting meditation. But I felt something inside and I was just like, I need to come back and delve more into meditation because I could see the benefit and the value in it, especially coming from a stressed out New York lifestyle of someone who had suffered a collapse on twice. I was like, meditation is a prescription for like what is ailing me right now. So yeah, I did 3 weeks in Phuket and then I went and traveled to Chiang Mai for 2 weeks and trained at the gym there. And then I did a week at Sit Mon Chai gym, which is like a professional fighter's gym outside of Bangkok. A lot of top fighters go there. So it was a magical 6 weeks that just really shifted my whole perspective in terms of like what I want out of life, what am I doing? And it really left me on like a natural high. I was just like, man, it was a transformational experience. And so I went back to New York and when I get back, I'm like, it was a hard adjustment, to be honest. It was, you know, people, the energy and people in New York is just loud, in your face. Everyone's aggressive. You go in the subways and you're just packed in there like sardines. And then I get to the office and everyone's just miserable, grumpy. And I'm just like, what the hell am I doing back here? Am I just going to stay here and put up with it? So I read the book, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And like a lot of entrepreneurs. Yeah, exactly. Like a lot of digital nomads, that was like the blueprint. So I read that book and it basically laid out how to create my own business and be location dependent and be a digital entrepreneur. So I read that book and I was just like, all right, if I follow this, this is how I can escape from New York. So I took some time thinking about, you know, what are the pros and cons if I leave New York and if I come to Thailand to Asia. And I finally came to the conclusion that, listen, I'm not going to stay here. And so 7 months later, from the time I came back, I quit my job. It was actually after New Year's. So the thing with Wall Street is you have to wait to get your year as bonus after the New Year's. Mm-hmm. So even though I made my decision to quit my job, I was like, listen, I don't want to forfeit a significant. So I packed all my clothes, sorted my apartment. And then day after New Year's, I walked to my office and I told my boss, Vinny, I'm like, hey, listen, I quit. And the funny thing is, he actually didn't believe me. He was like, what firm are you going to go to? What competitor? Can you get me a job there? I'm like, no, I quit because I moved to Thailand. to train Muay Thai and meditation. And he was just like, stop joking, you know. And for him, it was such a far-fetched idea. But so, yeah, so 7 months later, I finally pulled the cord. And basically, I sold everything in my apartment and I bought a one-way ticket and moved to Thailand on permanently, indefinitely. And so at that point, I didn't have any plans. The only three things I had was, one was to train professionally as a Muay Thai fighter, have my first fight. The other thing was to deep dive into meditation and attend a 10-day Vipassana retreat, which is basically living at the temples with the monks.
What was your experience like when you walked into your boss's room after New Year's and decided to just quit your job and buy that one-way ticket? I mean, how was that like for you to get that ticket and never look back?
It was liberating. It was really liberating. And it just felt like, I won the lottery also, because like, here I am, a single guy. You know, I was not in a serious relationship. I didn't have kids. Luckily, I didn't have a mortgage or a house. So it just felt like, it felt like the right thing to do for me. And it was just like I said, it was a huge weight lift off my shoulders that I'm no longer going to be stuck in a cubicle doing something that I hate for the next 20, 30 or 40 years. And so, yeah, it felt very liberating. And it also felt very in alignment with what my soul, my heart was calling me to do.
So let's go back a little bit, because you did share quite a bit on your story. And I love that you went really into like a lot of detail about how it all began for you. What were you telling yourself after the second time your lung collapsed that you did not tell yourself the first time? Whether it's something you told yourself or it's a question or both?
I would say I did not take the time to even reflect or question why the lung collapsed. I just brushed it off as like, oh, this is normal. Just like how people who work in high stress jobs get heart attacks. I just thought it was a normal facet of working a stressful job. So I would say the difference is I didn't even take the time to reflect and be introspective and ask myself, what the hell am I doing? What do I really want? I would say those were the questions that I did not even acknowledge the first time.
So what was the hardest thing you had to come in terms with when it happened the second time? And you mentioned that you had to do something about it, but what was the hardest realization that you had to accept for yourself in that moment?
I think the hardest thing at that moment was the theme of change. The fact that I needed to change, that what I was doing, my habits, my routines, my emotional world, everything had to change. And for that, at that particular time, I was 29. So I was not into personal development. I was not, you know, I wasn't aware of myself. I was very lost. So to even think about change it wasn't even in my reality, to be honest. You know, I didn't have any coaches or mentors to turn to. I didn't have any podcasts to listen to or like brothers I could call on that I could talk about. I was isolated, you know? And so trying to figure out a change was a hard thing. And then the unknown, I guess, because, all right, I got to change. But like, what does that even look like for me? Because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm lost. And so, yeah, I would say that was probably the hardest thing. The fact that basically I was on the wrong path.
So did it humble you to reflect and notice that, oh, maybe I am on the path that maybe thought it was, like you said, the golden, that it was the holy grail to work on Wall Street, but then realize that maybe this is not the sort of life for me.
Because I now was like, this is not in my future. That is then related to family. And living up to my parents' expectations, you know, knew that at some level, my parents are going to be disappointed in this choice and that I'm going to have to face that day. And the thing is, at 29, I was still looking for validation from my parents and approval. You know, I was not the independent person that I am today. I was still asking for advice and guidance. And I didn't know how to critically think for myself or make decisions or choices. So yeah, it was definitely a humbling experience at that point and scary, to be honest.
So you also talked about freedom, that when you bought the ticket, you left the job. And when you experienced the first Muay Thai camp in Thailand, it felt free, like you had the burden lifted from your shoulders. So how has your definition of freedom changed from back then and your definition of freedom now? Has it changed at all?
Yeah, I guess you could say it's changed. I guess I would say maybe it's more evolved into a broader definition as well as more specific definition. I'll explain that. I think back then I was just looking for like a physical freedom away from New York. But what I've learned from today and from the last 6 years is that freedom is not just on a physical level. It's also on an emotional, mental level. And that's how I define freedom now. You know, it's not just being able to like work from wherever I want, but also have that emotional freedom, having inner peace inside, you know, being comfortable with myself, being comfortable with my values, with exploring different things and getting to know who I really am and having that freedom, the freedom from within, I would say. Mm. And so, yeah, it's expanded to a broader definition on different levels. And like I said, the more I evolve and become more aware of myself and learn about life, I can learn about different types of freedom.
So I'm sure that a lot of people listening to this can resonate with this, because many of us are, some of our more aware than others of our values and what we treasure. And to live according to the values of the other hand is easier said than done on the many levels. So what has helped mm-hmm. you in moving from merely just being aware of your values and what matters, what excites you, to actually living it?
Yes, you could summarize that as deep inner work and healing. That's been a pretty big theme on the last 6 years. And to be more specific, I would say you could call it personal development, you know, really learning from other masters or experts. And I guess one specific tool, I'll mention two things I would say. I would say meditation and plant medicine, such as ayahuasca and San Pedro. Those have really been helpful in learning about myself and how to live according and in alignment to my values. So like I said, when I first moved to Thailand, that first year, besides training Muay Thai, it was going to meditation class 3 or 4 times a week with my teacher, Toby, down at Phuket Meditation Center. And that kind of gave me, just like how we go to the gym and we work out our physical bodies, meditation for me was that mental, emotional training that I had never had. So being able to sit with my thoughts, being able to listen to them, to see them, also being able to get in touch with my feelings and emotions, that was a big thing. And then I would say that form like the stable base daily foundation practice, you know, meditating every day. And then I would say plant medicines, you know, being able to heal past traumas from childhood and release those things and further, like I said, connect to my feelings and emotions. And then besides that, also connect to what my actual values are. Because if you'd asked me what my values were, you know, 6 years ago, I would have just been like, I just want to make money, you know. But now my values are things like having an impact, being of service, leaving a legacy, and freedom.
So tell us more about meditation and the effect it has had on you. And you touched upon it a bit. Was it just the act of meditating every day that helped you, or it was a specific form of meditation or release that allowed you to sit with your thoughts, like you mentioned, observe and be okay with how you're feeling, whether it's happy, sad, and so forth?
Yeah, I would say two things with that. It was, one was obviously the daily practice of grounding myself. That was a tremendous of value. The other thing was delving into terms of like realizing what the root causes of suffering are, things like attachment, expectations. Because I had never learned that, you know, I'm not talking about it in terms of like a religious sense. I'm talking about like these concepts they teach in Buddhism. You can look at it in terms of personal development, like a lot of personal teach that. But yeah, for me, just having these basic beliefs, you know, rewiring them, that really helped me kind of set a healthy mindset, a more positive mindset. And then I would say the last thing is that 10-day Vipassana retreat I did in Chiang Mai, that was very transformational. The reason why is, and I would say out of the 6 years, I would say that's probably one of the top 3 transformational experiences I've had. And the reason why is because this was in Chiang Mai. So it's a Vipassana retreat where you go there for 10 days, just for you who don't know what it is. Vipassana and the language. And what that translates to is insight into the reality of nature. And basically, at a 10-day Vipassana retreat, you go to a temple with the Thai monks, and it's very traditional, so there's no talking. You pretty much wake up at 4 in the morning, and you meditate all day until nighttime, and you're only allowed 2 meals a day, no eating after 12. So very rigid, and you're just doing either sitting meditation or walking meditation. And that really forces you to confront whatever stuff you've been carrying for over the years. And like I said previously, I believe my collapse song was due to not just the physical stress, but also the emotional stress that I had been carrying around, not just from Wall Street, but from my childhood. And so when I went to this meditation retreat, my intention was to pretty much see what the emotional baggage I was carrying. I kind of had an idea of what it was, but I was like, you know, I need to face these things head on and stop either running from them or repressing them with drugs or partying or whatever distraction. So the second or third day I get there, I'm sleeping and I wake up and I have a dream, and it's involving my father and I, and basically we're getting into a confrontation, to a physical altercation. And then I'm just screaming and yelling at him afterwards. And so I wake up from this dream and I'm punching the bed. And, you know, like I said, a lot of things from childhood evolved around the fractured relationship with my father and I. And so basically, I had been carrying a lot of hostility, anger, and resentment towards him. Now, the thing also, I don't want to bad about my dad. I still love him. We're still close. We've healed a lot of the relationship. But growing up, you know, I didn't have these tools to communicate that. And so, yeah, I had been carrying these things around since childhood. So that at the temple, I finally released it through this dream and of me physically releasing it. So at the end of those 10 days, when I left the temple, I had felt like somebody had pressed the reset button in my head. I had this sense of inner peace and quietness, which I never experienced before, especially when you come from New York, where your input and sensory is just bombarded every time. And so I had this sense of peace and calmness. And then also I felt like I had released all these heavy emotions that I had been carrying inside. Like I really say, like, I never felt such a lightheartedness about me before that. And I realized, like, things like anger, sadness, and grief, like, even though they might be feelings, they can weigh on a person very heavily if we don't deal with them. So that meditation retreat really, it pretty much like was like a detox, I would say, for my mind. And I was able to really clear things out from within. And so, yeah, the daily meditation practice and then having that powerful experience was able to physically and mentally release things. That was really why meditation helped me a lot.
Mm. So if people want to get started, I mean, if let's say they haven't started meditating, or how can they get involved and how can they learn more about it? I mean, there's a lot of resources out there, and some of them, you know, less, maybe not as good as others, but how would you approach that?
Sure, that's a really good question.
If it was day one for you.
I always like to keep things simple for friends, for clients. And so I would say the easiest thing is to start with your smartphone. Some suggested apps that I recommend is, one is Calm. Another thing was Headspace. I personally use Insight Timer, but I think for new beginners, I think having a thing like an app that has a guided meditation, I think that's really helpful, because beginners, it's easy to get caught up, like, am I doing it right? Am I, you know, it's easy to get lost. So I think someone holding your hand, guiding you through, I think that's a really good first resource. And then those things also help you track your habits, because with meditation, just like anything else, having consistency is the biggest thing to having it become a normal daily practice. So I like those applications because it can keep you accountable and keep you consistent and keep you on track. I would say start with that. You can also check out YouTube. There's a lot of different guided meditations. One teacher I would recommend, someone that's been recommended to me and that I used to listen to, is John, I think his name is John Kabat-Zinn. And he's got guided meditations. And the thing is, like, you know, some people think meditations like this woo-woo or hippie thing. It's like, it's actually to be like all airy fairy. And I think that's also why I would recommend someone like John Kabat-Zinn, because he's a pretty grounded guy. You know, he's not going to be talking too far out there to put people off, and he comes from a more balanced view. And so that's the thing. It's just, I would say, if experiment with different meditation techniques. I'm also big into breathing meditations as well. Things like Wim Hof, like pranayama, yoga breathing, or this thing in Bali called Nanda Mandala. But I would say check out breathing meditations as well. That's another powerful way to get the meditation. And then, yeah, if you want, I would say maybe check out the book, The Power of Now, I would say also by Eckhart Tolle. Mm. That book was recommended to me by my meditation teacher. So that's one of the first books I read in Phuket. And that really was super helpful for a beginner in terms of like, and so that book kind of breaks it down into an easy digestible way to get your head around meditation. So I'd say those few resources are like a starting point.
So you would recommend meditation as probably one of the most powerful tools to find that inner peace within yourself, mm-hmm. right?
Correct. And transform it. It's been a transformational tool for me and other people. So yeah. It's one of the easiest, simplest, free things you can do.
And the second thing you mentioned was mm-hmm. plant-based medicine. Maybe for those who are not familiar with it, perhaps you can share a bit about your experience with, maybe not going too deep into the experience itself, but just the practice.
Sure. So when we say plant-based medicine, we are talking about South American shamanism or native indigenous cultures, who basically they don't have a pharmacology system or a healthcare system the way we do in the West. So tribes in the Amazon, such as the Shipibo tribe, who I went to go see, they get their medicine from the forest or from the jungle. So one medicine is called ayahuasca, and that's made from the tree bark of the vine, of the ayahuasca vine, and it's boiled together to make tea, if you want to call it that, along with the chacruna leaves, which is another plant out there. So it does have psychedelic properties to it, psychoactive ingredients, but that's not the only thing that makes it a medicine. So basically, you know, they use that, you could say, almost as therapy for people with mental or emotional ailments, but also it works on the physical level as well. It's a detoxing process and it's a purging process. So the reason, ayahuasca, it's been used for, you know, centuries of years by the local tribes there. And this is in countries such as Peru, Colombia, Brazil, Ecuador. And so, yeah, ayahuasca is very powerful plant medicine. And it's personally helped me with a lot of healing, further healing with childhood. You know, I went after basically the meditation retreat. I heard about it through the Joe Rogan podcast. And he had talked about plant medicine. And before that, I had never really done much of any of these things. And I felt called to work with the medicine because I was like, listen, I'm on my journey of healing and personal growth. And I feel like this fits in alignment with my values and what I'm trying to work on personally right now in my life. So yeah, that was in 2014, I flew to Peru. And another plant medicine that I would quickly mention is San Pedro, which is a cactus that also comes from South America as well, but that grows in the native Andes mountains. And it's a different experience, but it's also administered by shamans. Hmm. And yeah, it's been very beneficial in terms of helping me to connect to my emotional world, my feelings, and my heart. And so, yeah, the reason why I'm a big proponent of these medicines is because there's just so many benefits to them, you know, whereas it's therapeutic, but then also, you know, I've continued to work with them on a yearly basis because they help me get more clarity with my relationships, with my business, with the direction that I'm going in my life, the ultimate vision and mission that I'm working on. I would say that these medicines have kind of helped me, give me guidance in terms of pursuing those things. So that's why I continually work on incorporating plant medicine to my life. Just the way I guess you would say, like, do a yearly detoxing. I think it's valuable. I do that in the same way by going to South America.
Now you actually run the ayahuasca retreats, right? In Peru.
Correct. In Ecuador, South America. I will be doing them in Peru next year. But last year I ran 3 men's only ayahuasca retreats and San Pedro. And I do it in conjunction with native shamans from Ecuador. So basically, we bring a small group of guys, anywhere from 6 to 10. And the shamans, they actually have the land and the house. It's actually at their house and property. So we go to Ecuador in the mountains, and the shamans, they lead the ceremonies. I help and assist during that time. But I also, what I actually do is it actually with the preparation, with the coaching, it's really prepare guys. Because if you think of plant medicine as a marathon, you know, when you have a ceremony, it's, you start anywhere, or you start around 7 p.m. and then you go pretty much the next morning. And it can be a very physically and emotionally taxing experience. And so just like training at the gym, if you're going to, if you make that decision to sit and drink medicine, you need to take the right precautions in the preparation. So I usually do about a few weeks to a month of preparation coaching beforehand. And then during the retreat, I'm also doing group coaching. I'm also doing workshops to really combine the effect of the medicine with things like personal development, emotional intelligence. And then after the retreat, I'm then doing integration coaching, because a lot of people have these big insights. Just like if you go to like a Tony Robbins thing, you have all these big insights and realizations, but you need to then, after the event, after retreat, you just lose it. So that's what I also do with the guys as well after retreat, is do integration post-retreat coaching. So yeah, these retreats, they're just for men only, and I'm teaching them different techniques, like I said, with different areas of personal development.
Well, why men only?
Why men only? So, I mean, I've been doing transformational life coaching the last 3 years, and I only specifically work with men. And I get this question, especially from other women, because women are actually like, Chris, I'd love to work with you. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like I would love to help women too. But the reason why I specialize in guys is because I'm a guy. And the guys I help are usually anywhere from the 20s into late 30s. And they're pretty much, the guys I'm helping are pretty much who I was before I made this transition. And because I intimately know their problems and their world and the reality, because I had to go through that, that's why I choose to, as Gary Vee says, stay in my own lane. And so yeah, that's why I just choose to specialize with men right now. And the other reason is also because, you know, you and I, we met at a men's circle, you know, a couple of weeks ago in Chiang Mai that I was hosting. And you look at men versus women, and women have sisterhood circles everywhere. They have women's retreats everywhere. There's so many offerings. And I think a big part of that is because society said it's okay for women to come together and be open and talk about the emotions and connect. Whereas for guys, we're still in that phase of changing that stereotype where guys can connect with each other on a deeper emotional level. And America can be a very homophobic society at times too, you know, like guys are just very like, oh, don't touch me, or don't hug me, you know? And it's just like, so when I looked at all the retreats, you know, for myself, I noticed they were all mixed gender. And I'm like, how about the guys? Like, why, how come no one's helping the guys? How come we're forgotten? And so as I was doing my coaching, I'm like, you know, eventually I want to do my own men's retreat. And the thing is, I went to different men's retreats as well. You know, I went to the Mankind Project. And so the reason why I specialize with helping guys is because, not because I don't care about the woman, but just because there's not as many people specializing. There is now starting to, but it's compared to the woman's side, it's not as large. And, you know, eventually I do want to do stuff with, I did host a women's and men's circle for Valentine's Day in Chiang Mai. And eventually I do want to help our sisters, the women. But I think my best time and energy right now is putting my wisdom, sharing that with the guys.
Awesome stuff. If people want to find out more about your retreats, and they happen to be in Chiang Mai or Bali or wherever you're hosting your men's circle events, where can they find out more?
Sure. I have two big websites I just redid. One is my coaching one, it's ChristopherWChiu.com. And then the other one is Hero's Journey Experience. So that's the name of my retreat, that brand that I created. So heroesjourneyexperience.com, all one word. And we'll put that in the links to make it easier to check out. But yeah, I would say those are the two easiest ways, my two websites, and then also connect with me on Instagram. ChristopherWChiu is my Instagram handle, my personal one. And then Heroes Journey Experience, the second one, is the Instagram one. So And then the website has my social links for like YouTube and Facebook. But I would say the websites and Instagram, that's where I'm most active right now. And that's the best way for people to get in contact with me. And we're actually doing, I'm doing two retreats in June and then July in Ecuador, 12-day ayahuasca San Pedro. So we're keeping that limited to 10 guys each. We had a guy last week from California sign up actually. So yeah, I just started opening up applications. So if anyone from viewers would like to listen, please let me know. I'm also offering an early bird discount right now if they take that and act fast.
Love it. Is there any parting words you'd like to share with our audience today? A number of things we covered, whether it's meditation, whether it's personal development, or simply just maybe the listener listening to this right now is at a point in their life where they are, you know, reached a certain success or maybe career-wise, but they want to look for something more in life. You know, maybe there's something that's that they feel is just not complete.
Yeah, I like that. So I'll say this. One is, it's never too late to change, to transform or shift the direction of your life. You know, I was 32, 33, and it's all relative. You know, some people think that's old, some people that's too young. But I would say the first thing is, it's never too late to change, to make changes in your life, in your career, in your business, your relationship. And the other thing I would say that is true for me is, as cheesy as it sounds, follow your heart, because that is what's going to keep you, you know, when I say, and that, you know, it's, that will give you, when you have deeper fulfillment and a true purpose in life, your North Star, that will give you things that money cannot give you. It will give you deeper meaning. It will give you deeper fulfillment to your life. It'll give you that excitement to actually wake up in the morning and work on creating whatever it is, your art, your masterpiece, your career. It will lead you to things like finding out what your impact is. And, you know, it'll lead you to finding those people who are your tribe and synchronicity. And so, yeah, I would say follow your heart. That's a big thing, because that for me, like I said, I was conditioned a lot by society and things that my family wanted from me. And when I finally had the courage to finally listen to my heart, that's really when things unfolded and the magic happened. So I would say those are a few things I would leave with your viewers.
That's very deep. I think I also have to listen to that last bit a few more times. Well, this is actually a very deep episode. Usually we talk about various things like travel, business, but this time it's really going deep into ourselves and examining things that either be conscious of, not conscious of, or conscious of, but not yet willing to go deep and to address it. This pretty much concludes our episode today. I really appreciate you coming on the show, Chris. It's been a pleasure. If those listening would like to learn more about Chris, check out his Instagram, his website. All of that will be in the show notes. Looking forward to seeing you all on the next episode.
Thank you, brother. Talk soon. Take care.
Talk soon. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.